You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hi there, I'm Brian Abana, and you're listening to the Mall Over Codpast.
Hello and welcome to this week's Mall Over podcast, the only rugby podcast that gives you the news, views and opinion on the weekend's rugby action, all the West Country accent. You can find us on Twitter, we are at Mall Over Podcast, Mall Over Rugby Podcast on Facebook, and you can find all of our podcasts and other content on the Sports Podcast Network. I'm joined this week by the nicest man in Cornish Rugby Podcast, Tim Ben Eustace. How you doing, Ben?
Yeah, good, thanks, mate.
Good, and I'm also joined by, I don't even know how to describe him anymore, a complete cunt. Yeah, let's describe him, let's drop the C-bomb early. One of the shortest known Mike Friday lookalikes in the world, Douglas Andrews. Hello, Dougie.
How you doing, Millers?
Uncle Millers, that's a good one. Let me start with a little story. Because we mentioned last week that you and I went to the Oval to watch absolutely no cricket. But what we failed to mention, because we ran out of time and I had to do that little interlude segment at the end, was we were faced with, on the train from, was it Chalfont and Latimer that we got on the train? Was it Chesham?
Amersham.
We got on the train at Amersham, did we? Right. So we got on the train from Amersham to Marylebone. And I think it might have even been at Chalfont and Latimer that two of the most, I mean, to say the two most middle-class plum chino-wearing boys from the city got on and proceeded to have the loudest conversation known to man across the carriage about all sorts of things, including one guy who was leaving his job that day and was telling everybody he had no idea how many people were coming to his leaving drinks because there were bloody loads of them. Loads of people going to his bloody leaving.
They're all coming. They're all coming.
Everyone's coming. Like, everyone. Ben, go on, mate.
When I got the train back from one of the World Cup games in Brighton, there was an American guy who obviously knew everything about rugby, who'd made friends with two red chino types. And he was like, "Yeah, hey, guys, what's your favourite premiership team?"
Premiership.
You just saw the panic come over their faces because they only go and watch one internationally. Yeah. And eventually they're like, yeah, Harlequins. Yeah, I love Harlequins.
I mean, this got better because it turns out that one of the guys had been trying to retire for so long, but he was picked for they had a hooker shortage in the club, so he came back, but he didn't even get picked, and he was the only hooker available. He was quite annoyed by the whole scenario, and then they decided to start talking about their favorite team, which just happened to be Saracens. But they'll only go and watch Saracens. We'll only go to Barnet if I can tap up my friend and get us some free tickets, and maybe one of us can drive, and then three of us can have a few, you know, five pints, and the driver can have like two or three. I'm like, well, clearly that's illegal, but you know, we all know it's five and drive. And then to cap it all off, one of the guys went in to talk about the new Saracens kit, and he described Owen Farrell, and I quote, "Have you seen the new Saracens kit? Oh yeah, Fazza looks amazing in it." fucking Fazza. So Dougie and I sat opposite each other on this train. And the minute he said Fazza, all I did was look up from my phone, and Doug's shoulders have started to shake a little bit. And we're just looking at each other going, you know, when you know what each other are thinking, he's going, these two are an absolute pair of melts. What are they going on about? One of them clearly,
everyone's
having his mum and dad Sky Go because he can't.
No one went because
he didn't want to pay for his own. Went.
He's been trying to retire for years from the rugby club because everyone fucking hates him.
Typical. He's that typical guy.
Yeah,
and it was funny. So there you go. That was a funny. Well, I guess what it depends what your definition of funny is, but that was the anecdote from the train. Should we talk about some rugby from the weekend and beyond? Other than the Premiership trying to eat itself again with this whole Worcester scenario that I'm sure we'll come on to. There were no Friday night matches on live television this week, I'm assuming to do with crew availability and camera availability.
Nothing to do with that. It was Northampton Saints not having adequate rest time because they played on Sunday last week and they were due to play on Friday this week. And so they claim that they didn't have enough rest, which I don't know how the human body works, but I'm not sure how an extra 14 hours rest makes that much difference.
Yet again, the Premiership doing its best to make itself look like an entirely shambolic organisation. But there was a game on Thursday. Ben and Doug, did you see or hear anything about this Bledisloe Cup match?
Yeah, I caught the last 20 minutes of it, which was interesting.
Yeah, what did you make? I mean,
last 2 minutes was interesting. The rest of it, I couldn't give two shits about. But
yeah, I mean, having watched the last 2 minutes, and I've watched it a couple of times and listened to Reynal speak, I don't understand what the big deal is. He gave Australia ample time to get on with it. And actually, you would hope in the future more referees would take heed of what he did, because there's so much fucking wasted time in rugby that, you know, little things like that. Just kick the ball into touch. Oh, yeah, but it's the last 2 minutes. We're under real pressure, whatever. Just kick it into touch, mate. Kick it into touch. Yeah, you got the throw in.
I sort of felt like if you really back yourself, just tap and go. All you got to do is play three phases.
Yeah.
Three phases and the game's over. If you can't retain the ball, picking and go for three phases, then you probably don't deserve to win. I don't know what the statistics would say, but I'd probably suggest that you're more likely to pick and go three phases than you are to kick to touch, win a line out, play first phase ball and not concede either a turnover. But, or
I suppose the risk for the line out is you can waste a good 30 or 40 seconds by kicking it and just jogging over in that general direction, can't you? You don't have to sprint over there and you can get it.
Well,
right,
yeah, I
touch.
Mean, it's their own fault. It's just play the fucking game,
yeah,
you know, or stop the clock once a penalty is awarded and don't start the clock until it is put back in play. So, I mean, that's an easy answer to avoid this situation ever again. I mean, it'll never happen in the same way that there'll never be a scrum clock and there'll never be time put back on the clock for when a TMO interjection costs everyone 2 minutes of match time.
Yeah, 7 hours of their life.
I don't think many people have got a problem with it except for Australians, have they?
Which makes it all the more delicious.
I'd Australia to have won, because anything to see New Zealand get beaten at anything, never, you know. So I'd have liked
both those
Australia
teams, really.
To have won, but no, there really isn't that much you can complain about. It's just stupidity, rank stupidity. And another example of players just having no respect for referees and just sort of thinking that they're bigger than them, you know?
Yeah. Talking of rank stupidity, where I'm pretty sure I'm going to know the answer to this. Where'd you sit on that Darcy Swain clear out? pretty naughty, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, but are we forming an opinion based on outcome with that? Because if he goes 6 inches higher, he hits him on the thigh and everyone says it's perfect. I mean, yes, it's in from the side, but there's a million in from the side clear outs. You're told to go low. So he's gone low and he's just happened to hit a weak spot.
That is an argument.
So fine, mate. Don't tell me for a minute that that guy's targeted his knee there. I'm not having that.
You could never 100% know for certain unless he admits it, can you?
I've seen enough rugby over the years and I've seen enough interactions between professional rugby players to know that there is an innate understanding amongst those lads that they're part of a club and they look after each other. They don't do shit like that anymore.
But that, which is fair enough. And I don't...
It was a bad outcome. But I'm not having that. It was, you listen to the usual channels and it, he's targeted his knee. He should be banned for life. He should be banned for however long the player's injured for. It's like, you cunts have been telling everyone to go lower. This is what happens when you go lower.
Yeah. I mean, there's two schools of thought. I've seen lots of rhetoric of people, saying that ex-professionals saying that he knows what he's done and he's done him. And then there's the flip side of that, that you quite rightly say, yes, he came from the side, on the side and another 6 inches higher and he's on the thigh and it's all good.
Is there a middle ground here that he's lost his temper a bit? He's decided he's just going to fly in and hurt him. And by bad or good luck, whichever way you look at it, he's caught him in a bad area and done a lot more damage than perhaps he was intending to. I mean, we've all seen that happen. Someone's lost their temper.
I don't think they're mutually exclusive outcomes, are they? I just think it's one of those things again where something bad happens and we judge everything by the outcome of that thing. So if he gets up and walks away, we probably look at it and go, that is lucky he got away with that. Was it as bad? Well, I just feel like, as with most things, when people have head contact in a tackle and the player bounces up and runs away, nobody's like, oh, he's hit him in the head. It's like, just move on to the next tackle. But if someone goes down and stays down, then I'll ban the guy for life. He's trying to decapitate someone.
There's a bit of an example of that in the Worcester Exeter game, wasn't there? We'll come on to a bit later. I mean, it's all fair enough. And I think if Swain hadn't had a little bit of previous, I know he got sent off in the summer, didn't he? After a little tete-a-tete with Johnny Hill. And I think maybe exuberance of youth or, whatever.
I suppose to a degree that is how laws work, isn't it? Because if your red trousered Saracen's friend gets driven home by his mate who's had 5 or 6 pints and they get pulled over, he'll get one punishment. But if he runs someone over and then gets pulled over, he'll get another different punishment, isn't it? So you do have
That's because he would have broken two laws. He would have drunk, drove and committed death by dangerous driving. The clear out, the thing that is the penalty is entering from the side. Going at someone's knee isn't a penalty.
Yeah, it's not the law.
And somebody getting injured doesn't carry extra sanction. Now you could say that, well, is it reckless? Well, I don't see how you can claim that that's reckless, because he's entered from the side, yes, but he's gone low as per the directives and he just happened to get a weak point.
He wasn't out of control either, was it? He didn't fly in like Skelton has flown in, you've seen before.
To me, the reaction is based on the outcome, and an outcome shouldn't be part of part of a rule of a game, part of a rule of a sport, is, or a law of a sport. Don't want any bedwetters to tell me off about that.
It's fair enough. I think
it shouldn't be part of the law. The outcome, the facts are, he entered from the side of a ruck, so it's a penalty. It wasn't reckless, in my opinion. It just so happened that he caught a weak point and popped somebody's knee in twain. But that should have no discernible input into the decision-making process or the citing process afterwards. Otherwise, you know, what happens if you tack tackle someone and they fall over and break their collarbone? Do we have to pull you up because it's reckless, because you don't know what's going to happen to the player after you've done it, because he's broken his collarbone?
I think it's slightly, that's a slightly different scenario.
Why is it? Because you're committing an action that is out of control. When you tap tackle someone, you don't know what's going to happen to them.
If Swain had come in legally into that ruck and the same thing had occurred, then there would be quite literally no sanction.
No, but at the same time...
Same as of a tap tackle.
Right.
Legally.
Right. So the sanction was a penalty, right? Did he get sent off?
He
got a yellow. Right. So what's the yellow for, coming in at the side?
Well... That was the only
in the side, unless they injure someone, in which case
the only reason they looked at it is because of the injury. They would never have gone back.
No, so they are directly refereeing that circumstance on outcome, which you can't do. Otherwise, you'll have to pull up every single try. But I'm not sure there's any coming back from. That's this kind of officiating. I think it's once you set a precedent for something's happened, oh, he's got an ouchie, well, we better review it. It becomes, well, then every person that gets injured has to be reviewed. And then your decision-making process is coloured by the fact that that person is injured.
Yeah.
There was one of the good documentaries, I can't remember who recommended it on... Long snapper this week about the untold stories. Have you seen the one about the NBA ref?
No.
Okay, so there's an NBA ref who was giving information to people for gambling purposes. And he was saying that he was basically insider trading on the NBA, right? So he would know that, like throughout the documentary, you get, oh, well, I knew that so-and-so coach had a run-in with one of this referee. So this referee was, the next time he was refereeing, was going to ping him every time they did something to get back at him. So I knew that their job would be harder. So it's likely you bet on the other team. And when he got rumbled or gets rumbled, I don't care. When he gets rumbled by the FBI and everyone gets involved, the FBI sit him down and say, were you fixing matches? And he was saying no, because I wasn't actually betting on the games. All I was doing was giving information that I knew to people who would then bet on it.
Yeah.
But the FBI would say to him, well, you may not have been fixing games, but subconsciously you could have been making decisions based on the fact that you knew money was being bet on the outcome that you were suggesting.
Right.
So actually you were influencing that game, even though you didn't know. Right. That's kind of what's happening here with these decisions, because when it goes to video ref and you're seeing a player arriving in agony and on gas and air and being carted off a pitch, you're looking, well, that must have been bad. So regardless of what you actually see, you've already got in your head, well, it must have been foul play because that bloke's injured, regardless of the facts. And the facts were he came in at the side at a slightly dodgy angle and broke someone's knee.
Again, that is a lot, you know, it's a lot like the Dunn incident for Exeter at the weekend, where his foot was touching the floor. I can't remember who the winger was, but they looked at it for, even though it was clear his foot was on the floor when the contact was made, they felt like they had to go and look and look and look at to make.
Yeah, and I texted the group, didn't I? That British television, HD television, is filmed at, I think, 30 frames a second.
Yeah.
Might be 60. Can't remember. 30 frames a second. So, and the difference between his foot being up and his foot being down was 2 frames. So that's 1/15th of a second.
Yeah, exactly.
So yellow card and play on.
Yeah. Or not even yellow card, potentially red card and play on. Right. And when it's that close, when it is that minutely close, they shouldn't even look. They should have looked at it once and gone, that's really, really close. We've got to give him the benefit of the doubt here because that is really close. It's not clear that his foot was in the air. If his foot was 3 or 4 or 5 inches in the air and you could see it, fine, no problem. But when it was that close, just get on with it. We don't need to keep looking at it over and over and over again. Move on. Yeah.
I mean, it's a tenth of a second. A tenth of a second between your team playing with 15 and playing with 14. It's madness that it comes to this.
Yeah, madness. Absolutely. I mean, we'll come on to that game in a minute. But we'll leave that Bledisloe Cup match right there. Right then, on to the weekend's Premiership. Unfortunately, I didn't get to watch anything Saturday because I was at the Perranporth annual event awards evening or afternoon. Got very, very messy.
Did you pick anything up?
I didn't pick anything up, no. Poor Erin. They have a trophy for a hole. They call it the hole in the bat, the duck award. So the person in the club with the most ducks for the season.
Oh, no.
And that just happened to be my 13-year-old daughter in adult cricket, which is a bit harsh, considering it's her first season. But I gave her a few days warning to get used to it. and I said, look, you're winning this. You need to step up. Yes, it's not, you know, it's a bit of a joke and embarrassing, but I was like, you know, accept it with good grace, accept it with a smile, and do better next year, basically. that was the conversation I had with her. I said, like, someone's got to win it. You know, if it's you, so what? Doesn't matter. Should drive you to get better. Don't get as many ducks now next year. And it literally is a cricket bat with a hole in the middle, the size of a cricket ball. But she then won a cricket bat in the raffle. A very nice cricket bat as well. So, you know, yin and yang. Right. Anyway. So yeah, I didn't get to watch anything on Saturday. What was the game? What was the game on telly on live on BT on Saturday? Was it Quinn Saracens? I'd imagine, wouldn't it?
It was, yes.
But Douglas, you were at Welford Road, were you not?
I was indeed. I was in High Wycombe.
Oh, in High Wycombe, High Wycombe.
Yeah, I was there for. Leicester against Newcastle.
Quick question. Is the TMO in with TMO's you
on
site? On site. So the TMO's on site. You're as a director.
Tempo.
Tempo? Hello, yeah. Tempo.
I think he might have even given me a shout out.
When, oh, really?
We had a decision. There might have been a, thanks, Dougie, from Tempo.
Thanks, Duggo.
And the big up.
Cheers, Tempo.
Big up from the Tempo, from the Tempmeister, from the Tempo. Keeping the Tempo with the Tempo.
Wow. Anyway, tell us a bit about Tigers versus Falcons. Would you make
Well, Steve Borthwick talks a lot of nonsense, doesn't he? it's like coaches go to Saracens, they get put through a random bullshit interview generator, and then they turn up and they, because he talks exactly the same as old Nobby up at Sale.
Oh, Alex Sanderson.
Yeah. And what other Saracens coaches are
there? Kelly Brown.
Yeah, they all do it, don't they? They all talk the same. Lot of new partnerships out there. The boys have worked really hard. Yeah, we just got to keep working now. Newcastle are a good side. It's like, oh God, why do we do this every week? Got to do two minute interviews where they just regurgitate the same crap.
it's absolute clicheville, isn't it? Like the DORs or whichever one of their minions they get to talk to the commentary team for 2 minutes in the first half and 2 minutes in the second half. The BT Sport think it gives real insight to the people watching, and it's a, like a, almost a pull back the curtain, and it's a, you know, it's a good thing to see. For anybody that knows anything about rugby, really, those people do not say anything at all than what you can see with your own eyes.
Well, the problem we've got is that when they do say stuff, it's so sensational. Like when, remember when Ellis Genn said the old sausage thing, and it was like national news that Ellis Genn said sausage on telly. It's like, it's not surprising that they do it. I just wish that we weren't in a position where people are terrified to say anything for fear of looking bad. I just, you know, these people are interesting people. There's stuff they could say and real insight they could give about how they feel about how rugby is at the moment and what's going on with the game. But you're never going to get it, man. You're never going to get it. And it's interesting, you know, having had a little insight into lower level rugby with the Chinner game and the Army Navy game, it kind of filters down. And you want those people at that level to be real and to give the insight that you don't get at the top level, because it would be genuinely interesting. But with most things, you get a way of doing it at the top level that sort of permeates into everything else. And it just kind of, it's just really dull, man. You might as well not do these interviews because nothing's ever said.
It's like the man of the match interviews.
Like the real Steve Borthwick, the real Steve Borthwick is calling Pat Lam a cheat. You know, that's the bloke I want in an interview. But anyway, by the by, the game was quite interesting actually, because Leicester came out really, really quick and Nadolo looks like superhuman. I'm not sure who his opposite number was. I don't think it was Radwan, but every time he got the ball, he looked dangerous. I think the problem with him is he does it like once every 3 or 4 months, and the rest of the time he's just a fat bloke that just stands there and knocks the ball on.
Yeah. What's his contract situation? Isn't he leaving soon?
He's going back to New South Wales in a few months. But listen, if he could do what he did on Saturday every week, the bloke could earn $2 million a year because no one could get near him. But he just, I don't know, he doesn't do it often enough for me.
It's like when Matey Boy, I can't remember his name now, let alone pronounce it. Ben, maybe you could pronounce it. The guy who was at Saints, who, you know, when he first turned up was unbelievable. And then teams slowly started to work out that he didn't have any hands and it was pretty easy to stop. I can't remember what his name was. The winger.
Come on, Ben, you barely said anything tonight.
Yeah, but I don't know who he's talking about.
The Saints winger who played for Australia.
Okay,
Fijian fella.
Yeah, but I still can't remember his name. Doug, this is where I'm.
I should know that, being a Saints fan, shouldn't I?
Being a big Saints fan, a huge Saints fan.
Yeah.
Was he Australian?
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck knows. Well, I can't remember his name. But the comparison is the same, right? Like he used to do things that. You just think
Tangeli Nairavoro.
Nairavoro, that's right. And he'd do things and you'd be like, fuck me, no one can stop him. He will beat the world. And then other days, it was just like, who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah, just a massive man with dicks for fingers.
Yeah. and that's a similar thing to Nadolo, isn't it? You know, they're one and the same. And, you know, you could probably apply very similar.
I genuinely love to see them playing level 5 in the centres together.
Fucking
that would be incredible.
I mean, if you're a winger in that game, you may as well put your slippers on because you ain't seeing no ball. But fucking hell, can you imagine lining up in the center if you're a level five, you know, you come in to, you know, pick up your 40-50 quid or whatever it is for your level five game, and
these two absolute
mutants turn up, and you're like, yeah, as you see them warming up, you get a Perry Hughes hamstring going the warm up. sorry, Gaffer, gotta go. Can't do it.
But I'm not sure. Back to the game. I'm not sure Leicester look quite as good as last year, which is understandable with George Ford not being there. They Gopper's playing at 10 this year. He won't be able to play 10 every week. He'll break. I know they've got.
He's fucking geriatric.
Pollard was there, wasn't he? In the crowd, but they just, their forward pack doesn't look as good. I mean, I guess Visa's not there. Oh, no, Visa was there. They didn't look as good. No Genge. I don't know. Newcastle though, they play decent rugby. They just can't defend, man. They've got no defense. Porous is how I'd describe them.
Very porous.
Yeah.
But Leicester are kind of without their whole, almost the whole spine, aren't they, at the moment? You got
no Dan Kelly.
Got no Ford, like you said. You've got the Argentinian hooker's not there, and the number eight's not there.
Is that Montero? I can't remember. Anyway.
Yeah, it is Visa that wasn't there. Visa's not there. Yeah. So no Visa, no Genge.
Montoya, isn't it, the hooker?
Montoya, yeah. No Dan Kelly.
No Stewart.
No Freddie Stewart. Yeah, I mean, they're missing quite a few players and they still hung 40 on Newcastle. So,
but it doesn't matter because Newcastle won't go anywhere. Yeah, so who really gives a shit? that was cheery, wasn't it? Like, you know, this will be what happens. The game that was on telly was Quinn Saracens that finished 27-30 to Saracens. I mean, again, I didn't see it. I've seen some of the highlights of the tries.
Seems a little bit harsh that they didn't get to play, you know, their best player.
Who?
Harlequins. Little Marcus Smith wasn't playing, was he? Keep up, Russ. Come on.
Oh, no. And that, but that again, like that wasn't allowed to play because some people in their infinite wisdom, the progressive rugby people or the people who feel like that they should be the arbiters of how many games a professional rugby player should play, say that he's not allowed to play because he hasn't had a sufficient amount of rest since he played 3 matches in July. The last of which I think was at the end of July, so 2 months ago, and he's got to have 10 weeks. It's just utter bullshit, isn't it? If you're paying someone 400 grand a year plus, I don't give a fuck, mate. You're an investment. You're playing in a big game against Saracens. You can rest for the next 2 weeks. We need you to play this game, mate.
Look, you're preaching to the choir here, mate. I think if you're taking your money from a club, to be a professional rugby player, you play as many games as you play until you break, and then we wheel you out in a fucking wheelbarrow and we get another one.
But I'm sure if you'd asked Marcus Smith, he would have had his boots on in a fucking heartbeat.
Yeah. Because you don't get hit.
No. Oh, no. But all that will happen is, so Marcus Smith, he'll come back. He might play one or two games for Harlequins, and then it's Autumn Internationals time.
Mm.
And then he'll be gone again for 8 weeks.
Mate, it's crazy. The in television, mate, the accountants have won. In rugby, Twitter has won.
Don't get me started on Twitter. I had a bit of a moan about echo chambers, and I found out about a thing that I didn't really know much about. It's a Twitter circle, and it's basically the equivalent of having a tweet and making it so only people you mention or that you follow can reply. So you can really sort of, you can really digest the people that are replying to you rather than actually opening it out for a debate. But Circle is even more introverted than that, because then only people within your circle can see what you've posted. So they can only see it and then reply to it. It's the most self-indulgent thing, I think, ever.
And by that happening, they kind of believe that what they're saying is the what everyone's thinking, and it's everyone delete Twitter, and you know,
yeah, I mean, the world will be a better place.
It and then delete it.
Yeah. There were a few more games on Saturday. Ben Bath lost at home to Sale, despite Sale having shown it sent off in the first 10 minutes, still couldn't get over the line.
That was one of those red cards, wasn't it? So like,
Nick Schoner playing for Sale.
Yeah.
Well, he sold me 3 donuts at Worcester on Sunday. He did.
I'd love to say that you were lying.
He did.
Actual Nick Schoner.
Actual Nick Schoner with the horror scar on his face. The axe wound on his face. Sold me 3 donuts made by Guilt Trip Coffee from the back of a van at Worcester.
Brilliant. I mean, you're not getting that level of podcasting anywhere else this week.
You really aren't.
And there's his titles for this week's podcast: Shownuts Donuts.
He's not from Cornwall, mate.
I'm going to spell it like that as
Shownuts,
well.
Donuts.
Shownuts Donuts. That's how it's getting spelt. But Bath are showing a bit of signs of life, though. I think, you know, they look at least a little bit more attacking, the ability to score points this season. But Piers Francis at 10, or was he at 12?
Piers Francis played and he looked damn good in that kit, by the way. Handsome man.
That the Bath kit's nice this year. All 3 of them are nice this year.
I don't like that it's a solid blue back, though, Ben.
Oh, well, on the back.
And the hoops go all the way around. Yeah.
That's not necessary, is it?
Does it show he's got a fat back?
I mean, obviously this game wasn't on telly, so from what I've seen of it, it looked a little bit like Bath were sort of living off scraps a little bit. But they scored 2 tries. I mean, they should do with that back line, really. But, you know, Sale... Looking at the team sheet, that's a very strong Sale side, isn't it? Tuilagi, who's playing his 1 game for the season. And, you know, you've got Hill, Curry and the Dupriers. So, you know, it's a fairly strong side. I mean, but as you say, I mean, it's one of those red cards I don't think should be a red card, but Bath should have been able to take advantage of that. What was it, 14 minutes in or something daft like that? Yeah, so, yeah. 7, sorry. So, you know, you shouldn't be being beaten heavily at home by 14 men.
With 70 minutes, yeah.
I think Atwood's a good signing. You know, when he was younger, he was...
Hold the phone. Hold the phone, Ben. Revelations all over the place on this week's podcast. Sorry, mate. That was unnecessary.
I just meant...
He's
in
not
general,
happy with that, is he?
But yeah, it looks like Underhill's out till at least after the internationals, so
yeah, he's broken in. He's just
that guy is an absolute body wreck, isn't he?
I mean
he should have had 300 caps for England by now.
Oh yeah, if he wasn't perennially broken, then
he's England's Sam Warburton.
Yeah,
because when he plays, he's always the best player on the field.
Yeah. Very, very good point. Let's move on slightly. And go on.
Save Jeff Bezos some money by being the stock orc character in the new Lord of the Rings series.
Not watched it. It's not for me, mate. Anyway, Wasps lost at home to Bristol. Wasps are in a funny place, but they're not quite...
Coventry.
Well, yeah. They're not quite as in a funny place as Worcester. Now,
wasn't Russ trying to build a mine in one of those episodes of Lord of the Rings?
Russ,
yeah, the like big ginger dwarf.
Big ginger dwarf. Interesting. Yeah, but we're talking about it. Worcester, I mean, Worcester, it's Tuesday evening now, 5 to 9. There's still no decision on Worcester's buyout. They've got a Premiership Cup match tomorrow night away at Gloucester.
There is no buyout. I'm telling you now, there's no one buying that club. They're £30 million in debt, apparently.
So they are for
no one's buying that rugby club. It's a tragedy because that, like, I say a tragedy, that's probably a bit much, isn't it? I mean, it's sad. It's sad for the people who have grown up as Worcester fans. It's sad for a club. I tell you what, was when I first started going there, they used to have all the old, in the club, that NAF side of the ground where there's a rubbish stand, they used to have in there all the old Worcester teams going back to like the 50s. You know how in the clubhouse you used to get the team first team photo every year?
Yeah.
And they were all up. And then one year, I can't even remember how long ago, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, they just disappeared. And
someone just
and it's
took
that
them down.
Kind of thing that's going from all these clubs, that sort of link with their amateur days and their past. And, you know, they used to play with a blue kit with a yellow hoop on it. And now they play in this sort of just generic blue kit with a bit of yellow on it, and they're called Warriors and XYZ. It's like these clubs are losing their link to the past, and that's what made them the big clubs they are now, and not like Dunstablians or Newquay. You know, they are proper dyed-in-the-wool rugby clubs, and blokes come in and just rip them to shreds and leave them in tatters, and it's really sad.
You mentioned Newquay there. It feels a bit like that in Newquay at the moment, and I'm sure if Phil was here, he would say the same. I mean, the behind-the-scenes stuff at Newquay is an absolute shocker at the moment. But
what is it with minority sports and the administration and the people who are involved behind the scenes just being absolute fucking morons?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately,
I don't understand
for Newquay,
what it
it's
is.
It's not the people at the club. It's not the club's fault, but it's not good. Whatever way you look at it. But what I did find pretty ironic from the Premiership, the PRL, that have now decided that 5,000 people capacity or 5,000 stadium capacity is now acceptable in the Premiership.
I don't know if you noticed how many fans are at the Worcester game.
5,000.
Nope.
Or 4,999, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was more than 5,000 in that stand, but I'm telling you, they already told them there was 5,000 in it.
Yeah. Well, I guess that they, for some sort of safety reasons and stewarding, they could only have legally...
Well, yeah, but, you know, it's a statement, in my opinion.
Yeah, but the point being that the PRL may have made this decision with the member clubs and all this sort of stuff. Oh, yeah, we'll reduce the minimum capacity to 5,000 so that when Worcester, or if... When it's, Worcester it, go to the wall, so, they can let Elin in. It's so transparent. That
it's
a
so transparent
joke.
And unbelievably cynical that I don't understand how there hasn't been more fanfare and noise made about this, because it's like the PRL have just gone, well, Worcester are gone. Off you fuck.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so we'll get Elin in now because they can fill the seat.
It's in their interest to help them stay in the league.
Yeah.
It really is. I won't say too much, but it is just cynical.
But they've almost gone, well, you know, like you say, that's it now. Worcester will be gone. We'll let Elin in. What we'll do is when Worcester go out of business, we'll give that seat to Elin because we know they're keen. You know, they're young and upcoming, these young upstarts. We'll get them in. You know, we'll give them some of Worcester's players as well because they're going to need somewhere to go. And then we'll shut the door again. We'll just bolt it up because that's it then. Nobody else will want to come up. Nobody else will have the means to come up.
Well, on the regulations, no one's coming up next year.
Yeah, but if Worcester go out of business...
But
are they just going to go down to 12 member clubs and then just it go, well, we'll have a 12 mockery ways. Of it.
If they say that people are clubs are allowed to be promoted now.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like Duke agrees. What I mean, that's the first.
Absolutely. Fuming.
That's the first time I've, you know, I don't know how long you've had Duke for. We've had him clattering his collar into his water bowl or whatever it was, but I've never heard him bark the way he barks like that. So that was pretty mad. I've just muted Ben. Because
is Ben touching Duke inappropriately?
I've just had enough of his dog. Fucking mad. He's just going up at the window, look.
Oh, hello.
He's got his lipstick out.
No, because it kind of fucks the championship, because some of those clubs wouldn't have spent the money that they might have if they'd have known that there was going to be a seat at the table available. So a club like Doncaster or Pirates may well have spent a bit more cash to compete with Ealing if they thought there was an opportunity to go up, but they haven't had that opportunity, so they've planned accordingly.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Because 6 months ago, the fucking door was firmly closed and bolted. It was 10,000 or nothing.
Frustrating, man. It's frustrating being a rugby fan at the moment. It feels like everyone's conspiring to make it as hard as possible to follow, watch, like, engage with any of it. I find it really tough as a fan. Like, forget what I do for a living, but as a fan, I wish that the championship was more of a viable competition to the premiership. But even that's been discarded. What are we doing with rugby? Like, you've got a premiership that makes baffling decisions week on week and is just being allowed to sort of operate like it's the Wild West, and you've got the championship, which everyone has basically just gone, well, that don't fucking matter. Why are we even bothering?
Yeah.
You know, it's tough.
I think a lot of people feel the same as well. Like, I was talking to several people about it this week, and it's like the constant stoppages in the game are just so frustrating. You know, the game just starts to get entertaining and you've got to take 5 minutes out to take a look at whether someone might or might not have accidentally caught someone in the chin. Yeah. I don't know. You know, I've said it before and it didn't go down very well, but whether, you know, rather than keep stopping the game, just have a count up after the game. And if there's any tackles that, you know, after four replays have had some head contact or something, you know, maybe everyone should have a quota of points. And if you have one, you know, one minor one, you know, on count back, you get one point.
But Ben, they have a bloke that does stuff like that, that can issue retrospective bans. He's called a sighting commissioner.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know,
just put an incident on report. It doesn't need to go down this whole, every single decision has to be critiqued and looked at. We've been over it. We've been going over old ground, but it's making the product more and more difficult. The first half at Northampton London Irish this week took 67 minutes.
What? You can't watch that, can you? It's just...
No. Three yellow cards. That's three yellow cards in 40 minutes of rugby and a 67-minute half.
And it's like you were saying earlier, those yellow cards now will start to feed through to lower level games where there isn't a video play. But I remember, you know, Hornets played after one of these directives about high tackles got brought in. You know, it got brought in on January the 1st, and Hornets had a game on, you know, January the 6th or something like that. And there were five yellow cards in the game.
And that's well and good, but when you're playing at an amateur level, I don't know how much a rugby yellow card costs because I've never been yellow carded, but I know in football it was like 17, 18 quid, wasn't it?
Is that what it's got up to now?
That's what it was when I was playing. I remember my red card. The red card I got playing football for Bentley Priory is something like 60 odd quid.
Shit.
And that was in 2003. So,
yeah, I don't think getting a yellow card in rugby is the same. It can't be.
No, I'm not sure it is, but
not as they're handing them out like fucking sweets.
But yeah, it doesn't exactly add to the enjoyment of everyone's match on a Saturday, does it? You know,
no, it doesn't.
It was a way.
It was really telling during the Army Navy match. Like looking back at that as a viewer. Just how much better the game flowed because decisions were made there and then.
Well, I wonder, like, I didn't watch it because we couldn't, but the Bristol Bath match.
You could. Why couldn't you?
The Bristol Bath match the other week.
I thought you were talking about the Army Navy.
No. The Bristol Bath match where there was no TMO. And I think there were some fairly contentious decisions, but everybody kind of just accepted there was no TMO and got on with it.
Yeah.
Now, what about if you had, you know, that instead of like the sighting commissioner who's in the stand or whatever, instead of having the TMO just pick up on everything, tell them to fuck off, right? Until you're asked to look at something. And then everything else just gets left to a replay of the match and the sighting commissioner and just sight him afterwards.
We're all slaves to the Barnsley-isms now, aren't we? Where every referee's got to talk in a certain way. Now, I just need to know if what we're looking at, has there been contact to the head neck area or is the contact first with the shoulder and then up onto the head neck area? And it's like, fuck me. Like we all, yeah, you're all intelligent blokes. Yeah, you all look good on telly. Make a fucking decision.
Doug, I just want to get your opinion before we go. Like, I didn't really want to go too much about the Exeter Worcester game because it was scrappy at best and an extra of one twice now without really putting in a decent performance. What was the overall mood like at Worcester? What was the atmosphere like?
Well, I think the fans there were obviously really behind their team and the players obviously were really up for it. And there was a mood of, well, we're going to do this for Worcester Rugby Club, and the fans were going to be there for the players who were turning up without getting paid, and you know, that kind of backs to the wall kind of feeling. But yeah, the atmosphere is exactly how you think it'd be. You know, you felt like a lot of their fans probably thought that this was probably the last time they'd ever watched them. The problem was, Russ, I was 60 foot up a hoist, so I couldn't really tell.
True, but you did get donuts sold to you by Shownuts.
Nick Shownuts, Greeny Sea Donuts.
There we go, Nick Shownuts, Greasy Donuts. right, with 6 minutes left of this particular Zoom call, shall we get into some any other business and then get the flock out of here?
Sure. Keen
for that, Douglas? Why don't you give us some any other business?
I'll tell you what I'll say. Let's go about the Queen's funeral, which obviously was, very well done. I'm sick to death of people who work in telly putting pictures of themselves working in telly on the internet. I don't give a fuck if you've worked at the Queen's funeral. Genuinely, stick your pass up your jacksie. I don't care.
I bet that's rife in your industry, isn't it?
The Queen's funeral. The only reason you're putting all that on there is to tell everyone that you worked on the Queen's funeral, and no one cares.
I bet that's rife here. You know, all the Facebook friends and people for just everywhere.
Mate, there's a couple of them on Facebook. Like every single day they do a job, they put the same picture of a camera, and then them standing there taking a selfie with the ground behind them, and it's like I just don't give a flying fuck, mate, that you're at Watford today. I couldn't give a shit. Stop doing it. The other thing about that was the broadcast was on air from like 8 till 5, and it felt like for the majority of that, I was just watching people having a slow walk.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, the military precision that went into that. I mean, it makes you wonder how long that they've actually trained for.
Well, mate,
with those specific people.
Grenadier guards don't do fuck all else, do they? They just stand there doing drill.
It was unbelievable. Didn't see too many. Yeah,
obviously.
Didn't see many QCS though. oh fuck!
Well, that's me. Okay. I just stop putting your fucking selfies on about where you are working. Like, I don't mind if you put a selfie on about something that's interesting. Just not another picture of a fucking camera. I don't care if it's on the mall. You dicks.
Ben, go on.
I thought the military bits of the funeral were brilliantly done, weren't they? But I just want to probably just a plea to my neighbours is next time I'm doing a podcast, could you keep your cat in your house? Because quite interrupted the flow there for a bit.
Yeah. I'd just like to say crunchy ice creams are available from Rawlinson's.
Very nice. Very good. Very nice. A couple of things for me, like the whole fury that Britain has gone into meltdown because Holly Willoughby and Phil Schofield jumped the queue to see the Queen in a coffin is one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard. But who cares, right?
Phil Schofield's a cunt though, right?
Yeah.
So I hope they do get him because he is an arsehole. He left his family for an 18-year-old boy.
But it's not like in the grand scheme of it, it's just really not important that two people skip the queue and however many other countless celebrities or whatever. And just because Susanna Reid decided to fucking queue up with her mum and David Beckham decided to queue up because his dad said that was the right thing to do, you know, all for humility and all for just being normal people. But don't make a big thing about...
You're one of the least humble people I know.
I'm as humble as they come.
Let me tell you, if you'd have been given half a chance, you'd have jumped that queue.
I wouldn't
have
been
right at the front, pushing grannies out the way.
I'm not really interested. Having, you know, we did our bit of time in the military. I was never a proper, you know, rah-rah Royal Air Force person. But, you know, I'd started genuinely to get a little bit sick of it all, you know. I couldn't wait for it all to be over. And the self-righteousness.
That's not what I said, though. What I said was you would definitely have pushed grannies and children out of the way.
I wouldn't. Definitely wouldn't. No, I wouldn't. And secondly, and on a lighter note, I discovered a series on Netflix, and this may shock you given my history of not liking stuff that isn't remotely believable.
I like wine.
I've just finished watching The Umbrella Academy. I don't know if you've watched The Umbrella Academy. Have you watched it? It's worth a look. Quite enjoyed it. And for all of my, again, you know, saying I don't like fantasy type stuff, it was very good. So there you go. This was fun. Felt a little bit more upbeat, slightly more organized, a little bit better this week. That's my opinion anyway. Obviously yours may differ. We may be back next week. I'm hoping that we might see we might have the Hanson back at some point. But Nuki are playing Vior this Saturday at Nuki.
If there's any streamed footage, I will watch.
And there's also half a chance that I might make a comeback.
What?
Against Vior.
Marshmallow Head.
Yeah. Before this broadcast ends any second, it is a distinct possibility. Given Nuki's current injury list and availability, it may be that old man Milsom gets wheeled out for one more go.
Oh my god!
But we'll see. And I'm sure if anyone's around, they might do some live streaming and or video of me getting marmalised by
I'd love to see it.
By an ogre from Camborne. So anyway, this will end very, very soon.
Podcast Network.